AgBioScience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
More and more companies are focusing on companion animal, which we are, but we can also be big enough to focus on livestock and drive that growth. Because when there's less people innovating in a space, it's a little easier to create your own identity.
Welcome to AgBioScience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinova CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to the AgBioScience podcast. The animal health market, estimated by many sources to be $60 billion globally. It's a broad market that spans everything from pet health to livestock and has applications for innovations from feed to vaccines to all kinds of therapeutics. It's a market that is evolving. It's a market that is fueled by innovation. And a guy who is leading that innovation, shaping the next chapter of the animal health market, is Tim Beddington. Tim, EVP Corporate Strategy and Market Development at Elanco. And he joins us now. Tim, welcome to the AgBioScience podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mitch. Happy to be here on behalf of Elanco and excited to share a little bit about our story.
I am elated to dig in, Tim. Elanco, now the second largest independent animal health company in the world. You have had a front row seat to the evolution of animal health, your time in the industry. Before we jump into Elanco, I want to get just some perspective here on the current state of the animal health market and what are some of those forces that you see driving change?
The current state of the animal health market is very positive. It's been very positive for a number of years. I mean, obviously, it's been through quite an evolution over the last 20, 30 years, you know, from being predominantly livestock to then the growth of the pet health space over the last 10, 15 years. And so you're seeing all companies were large animal only, and now they're either a mix of companion animal and large animal or focused on one or the other just because of the sheer size of the market now. So the consistent growth over an extended period of time has been pretty impressive to see as somebody that's been in the industry for almost 30 years. And it's what makes it so much fun to be a part of. And the driving force is really the biggest growth driver has been the companion animal space. And, you know, the transition of pets being from predominantly 10, 15 years ago, more outdoor animals to a real member of the family. And I think that's been the big driver and the spend according to that. And there was so many unmet diseases in that pet health space that have spurred this along. And for the first time in our industry, we have billion-dollar products, which makes it much more attractive than back when the biggest products were $100-200 million. So we're getting material-sized products, which creates different level of investment, different level of excitement, and more companies get interested in what we're doing.
It is incredible, Tim, when you look at the animal health market, one that you know deeply about, this really bifurcation of pet health, companion animal, and livestock. Elanco made a giant move, perhaps the largest acquisition in the history of animal health back in 2020 with the acquisition of Bayer Animal Health, really bringing a 50-50 portfolio, 50% livestock, 50% companion animal. How do you see the innovation in those two areas? You talk a little bit about margin. You talk a little bit about the opportunities that those markets hold. Two very different markets, but still unified under one animal health focus.
It's quite a dynamic challenge and one that is a little unique because we go through, you know, the companion animal space has still got many unmet needs, many opportunities. Livestock space still has many opportunities and there's many elements to the livestock space as well. So I think it's a real challenge to make sure you can invest in all the areas because the opportunities are much greater than what you can invest in as one organization. So historically, there were separate groups. Some companies focused on one another. Now, as we've gotten with consolidation, we've all gone back to working through both companion animal and livestock. And there's a lot of synergies between both sides, which adds a lot of value to that. So I think what we see is lots of opportunities in pet health. We also see lots of opportunities in livestock. Now, the sizes of the opportunities are a little different, but still, there's still a huge opportunity growth in livestock. Whether it be in the methane space, whether just overall productivity, there's a lot of diseases that haven't been eradicated for many years. And whether it's just US or globally, because on the global stage, when you think of Southeast Asia, South America, Africa, huge opportunities of things that diseases that were eradicated, like classical swine fever in the US many, many years ago, still very prevalent in those spaces. So there's still a very big global role to play in livestock, whereas pet health is continuing to evolve because originally it was US, Europe. Now, you know, many of the emerging markets, Brazil, China, are very big in the companion animal space. It's kind of a unique opportunity, but I would say both are equal opportunities. Both have a very big future. It's just challenging to decide where you put your investment.
I'm so glad you brought up this opportunity in both segments of the economy, pet health and livestock. You and I were both just in Boston at the Technology Innovation Conference for Animal Health, and so much of the airtime, so much of stage time, candidly, so much of venture has flown into pet health over the last 3-4 years. But this focus on animal health as part of a planet health or part of sustainability, really the big lever there is livestock. How do you see the duty conflict, that drive for innovation between pet health, all the venture, all the focus on pet health, where the real opportunity for meaningful change to the planet lives in livestock?
Yeah, and I would say, look, if you go back a step, most animal health companies came from a human farmer parent, right, at some point in time. And most of the analysts or venture companies that back animal health cut their teeth in human health. And so they understand the companion animal space because it's very similar, right? So therapeutic area, you bring your product to market, everything, then you work through that. And so that, I think, is something that they understand. They don't quite understand livestock the same way because it's a little more complicated, because when you think of pet health, it's about safety, it's about efficacy. But when you think about livestock, it's about how do we generate growth rates? How do we get animals to the end goal faster, right? And so it's a very different dynamic from how you think and how you view in the market. And so we've found historically that investors don't quite appreciate livestock the same way. And the growth rate in pet health has been higher than livestock for probably about the last decades, and the bigger growth rate. I would argue, though, when you look at the livestock space, over the last decade, there's been very limited innovation. And there's been some decent innovation, but not to the same level. And I think as we continue to dig in, there is still a lot of unmet needs, still a lot of diseases that are kind of treated today, but could be treated better, that you're starting to finally see companies say, let's invest that time. Now, the big difference is when you do research on the two is you do the same research to make sure the product works, then you have to do human safety studies to make sure, because obviously the product's going to be eaten. So it takes longer to bring a product to market in livestock, which is a little bit challenging. And one of the challenges we continue to face with the regulatory authorities is, hey guys, you're going to have to make it a little easier to bring some of this stuff to market. Otherwise, the barrier is going to be too high to bring innovation to market. So it's a little more challenging to bring to market, but the return is still there because less and less companies are innovating in this space. And I've found throughout my career that that creates an opportunity. If more and more companies are focusing on companion animal, which we are, but we can also be big enough to focus on livestock and drive that growth. Because when there's less people innovating in a space, it's a little easier to create your own identity.
Amen. I love the perspective, two sides of the same coin, challenge and opportunity. You just hit it, Tim. You just made some giant news. I mean, here within the last couple of months, Bovaer, feed additive methane reduction, incredible story of innovation on the clearance. Talk more about what Bovaer does, its role in livestock, and also how do you think about methane reduction as part of the overall product portfolio or focus of strategy?
There's been some challenges to the livestock industry, as you well know, right? Probably as well or better than most, just in terms of the perception of the livestock industry and its role in the planet today. And one of the challenges for, in particular, the cattle space has been, how do you change that perception? Because, you know, people are like, well, cows create a problem for the environment, and the environment's a key issue, whether it be political or personal or whatever you choose to leverage. And I think the opportunity for cattle producers to play a key part on that, because as I've heard in many different formats previously, cattle producers themselves really care about the environment because they're second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation farmers. They care nothing more than making sure they leave what they have in a better place for the family to come beyond them. So I'm not sure that the farmers themselves are the challenge, but there's a perception out there about that. And so, you know, as an industry, it's been, how can we help change that? How can we help enable them to operate and have a right to operate? And I think through many years of trying, companies have focused a lot on the efficacy of the product to try and drive that. But also, we've come up with a solution with some partners here that I think is going to be pretty effective in terms of A, changing the perception of cattle producers, B, changing the perception of methane use itself and how cattle can play a positive role in that, not a negative role in that. And I think that's pretty exciting, right? It's going to be an easy to use product. It's going to be delivered in the feed, going to be no challenges at all to deliver. And I think with the support of many of the governments around the country and also the federal government, I think you're going to see this adopted relatively quickly. Very unique approach, because obviously a company like ours, carbon credits, kind of very unique challenge. So we've had to lean in and help find a partner to be able to monetize that for the producer, because that's something we don't know. And obviously, you know, over time you figure out what you do well as a company and what you don't do well and where you need to partner. And I think partnering is going to be a bigger part of companies like our future, because you just can't do everything end to end anymore. I think that's more and more challenging all the time, particularly with technology advances and everything else. So Athian's been a huge partner for us to enable that. And without them, we wouldn't be at the position we're in. So I think between Elanco, between Athian, between many of the food organizations, between many of the state and federal governments, all with the same goal in mind, I think we're at a point now, we've shipped our first product out of our warehouse. We're getting ready to ship it into producers' hands here very shortly. Pretty exciting time to be able to reduce methane. And it's really not more from a carbon market methane reduction perspective than an efficacy. So it's kind of a slightly different approach to what everyone initially started, but it seems to be getting a lot of traction, a lot of support from key CPG organizations that will partner with us. And we've got a lot of them already on board. And I think as we continue to keep more of them coming our way, as they make their own commitments to reduce carbon for their own organizations, I think this is going to be a really positive thing for the image of the cattle industry and cattle producers and everybody's right to operate in a livestock universe.
Tim, I'm so glad you mentioned Athian. I think this is one of the most brilliant stories in the history of innovation in animal health. An asset that was partially inside Elanco, partnered with High Alpha Innovation here in Indianapolis, and created a carbon inset market through technology. Before we jump to break, you got to share more. Give us the quick thumbnail sketch of what Athian is and how it fits into this complex portfolio of methane reduction and a feed additive driving economics all the way down to the rancher level.
It's kind of a unique entity, right? Because obviously we're not in the carbon market. We're in the business of developing, making, selling products for the animal health space. And when you start talking about the carbon market, there's inset market, the offset market, there's many different ways you can sell carbon in different areas. We had to find somebody that was able to be a carbon provider effectively. And so they sell the credits. So we sell the product to Athian, who then sells through the producer, and they then sell the whole credit process. They manage the government money that flows through. And so that way Elanco is focused on getting to as many cattle producers as we can, selling as much Bovaer as we can to them. And really then we pass that off to Athian in a way where Athian is then the provider or the solution center for enabling the money back to the producer, enabling the subsidies from the government, enabling the CPG companies to come in and connect and gain their value as well. So it's a unique approach, and one that initially, when we're talking about how do we actually make this happen, it ended up happening many whiteboard sketches, many thoughts, many different things about how Elanco could do it. But it's a partnership that's been really good. And I would say somewhat unique to your point in the animal health space, where normally companies try and do this all themselves. But to find a partner like Athian that has been able to do what it's done very quickly has been pretty cool, because, you know, we'll get the protocol approved, we'll get the protocols for the products, but we don't understand the carbon space well enough.
We'll dig into what the future of this market looks like and how economics ultimately are driven back down to the rancher level and others. We'll do it right after this. The Ag Bioscience Podcast is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of health care has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. we're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infphealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to the Ag Bioscience Podcast. We're talking with Tim Beddington, EVP of Corporate Strategy and Market Development at Elanco. Tim, we've been talking a lot about this bifurcation of the market, both in pet health and animal health, dug deep into a lot of work that's happening in livestock, in methane reduction specifically. One thing that I absolutely love about the Athian story that you just walked through is actually creating financial incentive. This isn't just about adoption for adoption's sake, but this is adoption that actually drives margin down to the rancher level. Elanco CEO Jeff Simmons, one of the most brilliant leaders on the planet, talks a lot about sustainability has to be both environmental and economical. Share more about how you think about bridging those two halves of a whole, environmental sustainability, economic sustainability, as you think about the strategy of Elanco.
When you think about, first and foremost, we're a company that provides solutions for pet owners and farmers around the world, but we also have a role to play in supporting all the customers that we have and their ability to operate for the next generation and beyond. And I think particularly when it comes to producers, my family farms, you know, when you look at the challenges they face, it's very daunting, right? Because the cost of land goes up all the time. It's harder to pay things off. And I think the environmental aspect is more and more important every day in their right to operate as producers. I think there's many perceptions out there about particularly cattle production that I think science can debate which way or another we should go. But I think if we want to operate in this space, we have to play a leading role in the environmental aspect of the industry operating. We can't just sit there and provide products and make money off products and not reinvest that back in the industry. And I think that's something that we've probably been pushed into a little bit, but something we've really embraced and we're quite excited and proud about. And I think when you kind of change your mindset to, yes, you still have to do the first part because that's how we make money, but how do you make viability of your customers important? I think that's also another challenge. And I think those two elements, I think, play nicely off each other. I mean, look, we have to do a lot of work as a result with many institutions around the country, around the world, many governments around the world, because they'll see agriculture in different ways, being a global organization. And I think what we then have to do is say, what role should we play? Let's not overplay our hand, but let's make sure that we're heavily involved in the future of the agricultural industry. And I think that viability of customers, I think, is something that's pretty material to us. And the evolving landscape is really hard to keep up with, but I think it's still pretty material for us to want to do. And so I think when we think about developing products, it's not just products for efficacy benefits. It's also environmental opportunities. It's also other things that we didn't think of before. And it's very interesting as we develop one product, lots of others come along. And there's many other opportunities out there, I would argue, in many different ways. We evaluate them all the time. We've invested in many of them. We have lots of engagements with them because they're all looking to us now for, okay, you've found a path to market. How do we get to market, right? And so that's the bigger challenge is there's lots of opportunities out there, but they all struggle to find a way. How do we create revenue? It's like a lot of technology companies. Great technology, generate a huge amount of data. It's amazing, but how do we convert that to value? And that value conversion or creation is the secret sauce to unlocking the real importance of it. And I think Bovaer is a stepping stone. All products will be subtly different depending on how they're used. But I think the principle of Bovaer will lean forward and enable many more organizations to bring products like that or similar entities to the market in a way that people didn't think of, because it was always, okay, it has to add value to the farmer. They have to make money from it. Therefore, it has to have productivity benefits. Whereas with Bovaer, we've switched that a little bit and said, okay, let's just focus on the value for the farmer first, productivity second. And I think that's really driving some of the avenues. So thinking differently about the same challenge has really sped up the approach to market. I mean, Bovaer, I think, arrived to market in the US at least 2 to 3 years ahead of schedule based on that thinking, because we kind of changed the process on how we went there. And I think now, as you think about other entities, whatever it may be, whatever the solution may be, I think we've created a real path. So I feel like, you know, we've opened the door for the industry to really say, hey, environmental products are a way of the future and there is a value there. So, and we have very high hopes for the value we think we can create. So that's going to be pretty exciting because, like all things, like we've seen with the companion animal market, the bigger it gets, the more people get interested, the more products come to market, the more choices the consumer has, the better for everyone.
I think that flexibility, Tim, is one that is really unique to your point, not just in terms of go-to-market, being able to create a path to market, accessing customers for these new innovations. You and the team have done a really interesting, I think, job here of saying it doesn't have to be our innovation. Bovaer is a license, as an example. As the guy who's thinking about corporate strategy, market development, how do you balance that, right? How do you balance internal R&D versus external partnerships? And how do you dial that in the right way?
When you talk about external partnerships, it's you and pharma entities bring products to market, but they'll bring two or three products, take the best one. There's other opportunities to pick up there. Most of the parasiticides in livestock and pet health come from crop chemical companies. So there's many opportunities there. I think there's a way with AI today. I mean, I had many conversations with some of the crop chemical companies out there. They're like, look, we've got 20,000 molecules. We're not sure which ones work for you. You can put some algorithms together and you can bring it down to like 10 or 15. Whereas in the old days, you'd have to test all of those things, right? And it's quite common for us to get access to a product that we might treat for dermatology, but find out it works better in pain. And so, you know, once you get access to something and get it in your hands, you can then leverage it across other things. So I think thinking a little broader about where you get products from, I think, is a bigger thing. And also, the bigger the industry gets, more startup entities come in, more consolidation creates more startups, more big companies with more money, startups think they can make more money. So that pipeline of new products increasingly is coming from outside. We've seen most of the largest products in our industry actually were acquired in at a very early stage. So early stage R&D is coming increasingly from outside. And it's a real balance from internal, external. But when you get some of those products, when you work with them internally, you learn more about them, you understand how they work, then you can develop more on your own. Monoclonal antibodies is a good example. There's two companies brought them to market so far. There'll be more coming because of the ability to work. But initially, animal health companies thought they'd be too expensive to bring to market. We found a way to change that and bring them to market in an affordable way. So there's lots of technologies still out there. You can talk about gene therapy, all kinds of things that we think will have play a role, long-acting vaccines that we think will play a role in our industry long-term that didn't come from the key animal health companies that will still play a very large role. So it's a real balance, but it's about developing the expertise internally because even if you get the assets, you've got to bring it to market, right? And so the skill to bring to market is unique. And there's challenges too, because we're much smaller than some human pharma crop chemicals. So we say, hey, let me go find a place to make some monoclonal antibodies. Not that easy because human pharma will pay more, will fill up the capacity, right? So I think there's some uniqueness to some of what we do, but I think there's a healthy balance today and will continue to be a healthy balance of internal, external. And look, if we lean one way or the other, that's okay because your expertise is changing. But I think that ability to partner is the way of the future because doing everything on your own, like we always did, it's too slow. You get a little bit of bias towards mine's better than anything else. And then you lose opportunities. So that real clear thinking and evaluation of assets the right way is, I think that's the hard part.
Well, I think creating the conditions to make those interactions happen, to have that exposure, to have that experience, really the driver what Elanco CEO Jeff Simmons had behind the One Health Innovation District just announced here in Indianapolis, partnership with Purdue University, right next to the new global headquarters of Elanco. This, to me, is a whole new frontier of innovation as we look at plant, animal, people, the planet. Tim, as you're thinking about strategy of the company, you're thinking about strategy of animal health, give us a sense for what is One Health and where does it fit in to the broader animal health discussion?
It's a key point because, yes, we're in the animal health space, but in reality, we're in the overall health space. There's many things that we do that improve the health of humans as the long-term outcome, because if we improve the health of animals, therefore diseases don't get transferred, they don't get passed on. Many valuable assets. And if you look across the animal health industry, we have several places across the United States, not really globally, where there's several companies that are kind of hosted somewhat together. There's several universities that I think have done a good job in creating some R&D and doing some asset work there. But I think when you think about a general One Health concept, I think it's probably been lacking from the space we're in. And we see partnerships between crop chemical companies, to your point, human pharma companies, other animal health companies, even ones that we compete with, startup companies, all of those, to create opportunities, because we think there's opportunities, whether it is sharing access to pilot plants, sharing lab facilities, just sharing general thinking about how we approach diseases, what diseases are emerging in humans that we, and vice versa, how do we make sure we get independent products that don't cross over between humans and animals? And so there's lots of challenges there. Antibiotics is a great issue, right? Non-human antibiotics is challenging. There hasn't been a new antibiotic in the animal space for a long time. So through some of those partnerships, you get a greater awareness of what is possible, what's not possible, and how you create a path for that. So I think the new headquarters is started as an office building and has morphed into something that is almost like an epicenter of One Health, right? And I think we're very thankful to the state of Indiana for what it's going to create. But we think it's going to create a pretty powerful campus between access to one of the best universities in the country in Purdue and other startups and other technology that we'll bring to the site. It's going to be a pretty exciting location. And I think if we can help support the startup space in the animal health industry to get to their end goal faster, the animal health industry wins. It's not all going to benefit Elanco directly, but it's all about growing the animal health industry and playing our role as a leader in the animal health industry and saying, look, as one of the four largest companies, we have to make sure this industry survives well and sustains well. And the more people that want to get in it, the more we have to encourage that. And then the more we have to play a role to support their growth, because they'll get into things like other people here, gut health, microbiomes, all these things. These are all play a key role, but we may not do that work ourselves, right? But if somebody else does the work and finds a path forward, that creates an opportunity and we can help bring it to market. So these are all the things that the startups create that are not mainstream, but help grow the industry and are key, because we get focused on bigger things, but they still become critically important and they could become big things. So we're very excited about what it can become. And I think it's going to be critical for the industry long term. And we hope that others like us try to do similar things.
It takes a big vision. It takes bold leadership to do that, because to your point, it will be potentially beneficial to Elanco, but it may not be. And to have that intention of saying, we want this industry to grow, not just our company to grow, I think is a really critical differentiator. We have time for one last question. And I think this is one that is really important as we think about One Health, we think about innovation opportunities. That is the market itself. We talked about it at the open of $60 billion global market. As you look on the horizon, you're overseeing market strategy, market development. Where do you see the biggest opportunities for innovation, the biggest opportunities for growth in the months and years ahead?
This is the crystal ball, and everybody asks the question. Jeff always asks me, what's the next big thing? Every industry you go conference you go to, what's the next big thing? What's the next big thing? Look, I think there's a lot more value to create in what we already have today. There's lots of opportunities. There's still lots of untreated animals in all the key disease areas that we have. So I think access to more animals is key. Access to veterinary care is going to be a key to that. There's many animals that still don't get veterinary care today. So the cost of veterinary care is going to be a key issue, and access to veterinarians, because now there's a shortage of veterinarians around the country today. So all those things will play a role in the growth and the opportunity. Also, some of the growth of the online companies in supporting that, because I think that's been very helpful. One of the challenges has always been compliance of products. People go onto products, they don't use it as they should. Therefore, that creates challenges long-term over time. But, you know, some of the more auto-ship benefits have been really palpable in terms of improving that compliance and overall pet health. When you think also around consolidation of more and more of the veterinary institutions, more and more of the livestock institutions, that also creates some challenges, because there's a different level of professionalism that we have to kind of keep up with. So I think there's lots of opportunities of what we have. I would say when you think about new and different technologies, there's still lots to explore. There's still a lot of growth in monoclonal antibodies. We still haven't even touched pushing monoclonal antibodies into livestock yet. There's still these long-acting vaccines that people have been toying with that I think will come to light here in the next few years. There's still a lot around the overall health of the animal, whether it be gut health, other things that I think can play a key role moving forward. And I think there's still a lot of interesting unexplored things that we think may have a key impact, but we're not sure, you know, around gene therapy, all these areas. So I would argue for the next 10, 15, 20 years, a lot of unexplored areas that really can be pushed out particularly monoclonals into livestock, you know, and I think we can find a path to do that. That'll have a massive impact in productivity and quality. So I think the future is incredibly bright, I guess is the point I'm trying to make. Lots of opportunities for the industry. And I think those that are willing to capture those opportunities, and we've seen from some of our competitors that they've got a first mover advantage by taking some risks in targeting some new technologies and having some real value. So I think as an industry, we're in a really good place for consistent growth for a long period of time. It's going to be fun to be a part of and watch that continued evolution as we go in both livestock and pet health. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, Tim, I am glad you are leading it. Thanks for all the work that you're doing on behalf of animals across the planet. He's Tim Beddington, Executive Vice President, Corporate Strategy and Market Development at Elanco. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mitch. Pleasure to be here and really appreciate it.
And thank you for tuning in to Ag Bioscience. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you get podcasts. You can also subscribe online at agrinovusindiana.com. Just click on the podcast button. While you're there, don't forget to check out the events tab. You can find out where we'll be on the road. I'm Mitch Fraser on behalf of the entire Agrinovus team saying thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovus Indiana, hosted by Mitch Fraser, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovusindiana.com.